देवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 18, Prithu Maharaj Milks the Earth Planet, Text Number 19. Prakalpya Vatsam Kapilam Siddha Sankalpana Mayim Siddhim Nabasi Vidyam Cha, ye, cha, vidyadara, adaya, prakalpya vatsam kalpilam, siddha sankalpanamayim, siddhim nabasi vidyam cha, Yecha vidya dharadhaya Prakalpya vatsam kalpilam Siddha sankalpanamayim Siddhim nabasi vidyam cha Yecha vidya dharadhaya Nabasi vidyam cha Yecha vidya dharadaya Ladies Prakalpa vatsam kapilam Namayim Siddhim nabasi vidyam cha Yecha vidya dharadaya Prakalpya appointing Vatsam calf Kapilam the great sage Kapila Siddha the inhabitants of Siddhaloka Sankalpana Mayim, proceeding from will. Siddhim, yogic perfection. Nabasi, in the sky. Vidyam, knowledge. Cha, also. Ye, those who. Cha, also. Vidyadhara, Adaya, the inhabitants of Vidyadhara Loka, and so on. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. After this, the inhabitants of Siddhaloka, as well as the inhabitants of Vidyadhara Loka, transform the great sage Kapila into a calf. And making the whole sky into a pot, they milked out specific yogic mystic powers, beginning with anima. Indeed, the inhabitants of Vidyadhara Loka acquire the art of flying in the sky. Please repeat. After this, The inhabitants of Siddhaloka, as well as the inhabitants of Vidyadhara Loka, transform the great sage Kapila into a calf, and making the whole sky into a pot, they milked out specific yogic mystic powers, beginning with anima. Indeed, the inhabitants of Vidyadhara Loka acquired the art of flying in the sky. Purport. The inhabitants of both Siddhaloka and Vidyadhara Loka are naturally endowed with mystic yogic powers by which they can not only fly in the outer space without a vehicle, but can also fly from one planet to another simply by exerting their will. Just as fish can swim within water, the residents of Vidyadhara Loka can swim in the ocean of air. As far as the inhabitants of Siddhaloka are concerned, they are endowed with all mystic powers. The yogis on this planet practice the Eightfold Yogic Mysticism, namely Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi. By regularly practicing the yogic processes, one after another, the yogis attain various perfections. They can become smaller than the smallest, heavier than the heaviest. They can even manufacture a planet, get whatever they like, and control whatever man they want. All the residents of Siddhaloka are naturally endowed with these mystic yogic powers. It is certainly a very wonderful thing to see if we see a person on this planet flying in the sky without a vehicle. But in Vidyadhara Loka, such flying is as commonplace as the birds flying in the sky. Similarly, in Siddhaloka, all the inhabitants are great yogis, perfect in mystic powers. The name of Kapila Muni is significant in this verse because he was the expounder of the Sankhya philosophical system, and his father, Karnama Muni, was a great yogi and mystic. Indeed, Karnama Muni prepared a great airplane, which was as large as a small town and had various gardens, palatial buildings, servants, and maidservants. With all this paraphernalia, Kapila Devi's mother, Devahuti, and his father, Kardama Muni, traveled all over the universes and visited different planets. So the text again. Prakalpya vatsam kapilam siddha sankalpanamayim siddhim nabasi vidyam cha yecha vidya daradaya. After this, the inhabitants of Siddhaloka, as well as the inhabitants of Vidyadhara Loka, transform the great sage Kapila into a calf. And making the whole sky into a pot, they milked out specific yogic mystic powers, beginning with anima. Indeed, the inhabitants of Vidyadhara Loka acquired the art of flying in the sky. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Putai Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Vacharane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Pasgatya De Satarne. The exciting mystic powers are mentioned in this verse, at least exciting for those who are in the material concept of life. We should always remember as a basis two things. One thing is that we should remember is that we're not the body. We're spiritual beings. We're simply the observer of our material, so-called our material activities, which are actually not our material activities, but the activities of the body in which we're situated, which are being conducted by the material energy. Or, if we perform devotional service, then they're being conducted by the spiritual energy. In any case, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has mentioned that not only were spiritual souls, but prakrite kriyamana ani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara iti ame. Ahankara Vimudatma kartahamiti manyate. The bewildered soul, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, thinks himself to be the doer of the activities which are actually carried out by the modes of nature. Now, that doesn't mean that we're not doing anything, that we're simply hopeless victims of the material energy being carried on by the material nature, and that somehow or another we've fallen in here, although we're innocent, pure souls. But Krishna also mentions, Hadishtanam tata karata karanam cha pritag vidam vividas cha pritag chesta daivam chaivatma pantrama cha panchama, that there are five causes in order to accomplish any activity. He says, Adishtanam, with the material body, we need a material body to do something in the material world. Adishtanam tata karata. And then he mentions the karata, ourselves. So what are we doing? As the observer, we're desiring. Now, unless we have choices, we simply can only desire what's presented to us. We can only dovetail our desires with what's being presented. That real choice is either to dovetail our desires with the spiritual energy or the material energy. But even within the realm of dovetailing our desires and the material energy, there's endless varieties under the three modes. Those who dovetail their desires in the mode of ignorance, they become more and more attached to the idea of being the controller. Those who dovetail their desires in the mode of passion, they more and more become attached to the idea of enjoying in the material world. Those who dovetail their desires in the mode of goodness, they become attached sometimes to the idea of becoming the liberators, or liberating at least themselves from the material energy. The more one becomes detached from the idea of becoming the controller, the more one is given a body that is apparently able to control the material nature. The more one gives up the idea of becoming the enjoyer, the more one becomes free from the miseries of material life. The more one gives up the idea of becoming the savior or being the liberator, then one actually becomes liberated. So these are all different phases of illusion. Those who have given up one phase of illusion, they're presented in a different phase of illusion, similarly so-called higher phase of illusion, which is a higher phase of illusion if one ultimately transcends all illusion. But in any case, illusion remains illusion. Whether one is illusion to thinking oneself a great mystic yogi or thinking oneself to be a rock star, part of a famous music group, the illusion is not really that much different. Although, trying to convince a rock star that they're not their body and trying to convince a great mystic yogi that they're not their body may be different, it may not be different. But without ultimately dovetailing our desires in devotional service, we still simply are trading one illusion to the next. There are many varieties of mystic power. There are eight mystic powers mentioned here, such as anima, lagima, mahima, prakasham, vasita, kamyavasita, etc. So with these mystic powers, one is able to think oneself to be doing so many different things. But this is also a hankara of vimudatma. Because one acquires these mystic powers by concentrating one's mind upon the Supreme. Ultimately, everything, Krishna is the Supreme. And when we concentrate our minds upon the Supreme, we become empowered. We become empowered means the soul becomes somewhat liberated from the material modes, and the body and mind, in contact with the Supreme, they become spiritualized, just like when one puts an iron into the fire, it gets hotter and hotter and hotter. That doesn't mean that suddenly we become the controllers. It just means that what we're, the machine that we're driving in becomes different. It goes from a Rolls, from a Volkswagen to a Jaguar. An example is Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj was a little boy, 5 years old, but by his giving up sense gratification in a very exemplary way, giving up, first of all, eating only little fruit every third day, then only drinking little water every 6 days, or the second month he only ate leaves that fell from the tree, and then the third month, every ninth day, he drank a little water. Fourth month, he only took a breath of air every 12 days. And then he stopped breathing and stood on one leg. So this is certainly a method of not getting distracted by the material body. If one gives up eating and sleeping, one gives up drinking and even breathing, one can focus the mind, and he was focusing the mind upon Vishnu. And therefore his body became just like Vishnu. So much so that when his foot pressed against the earth caved in. It means that the whole earth planet practically caved in. And when he stopped breathing, the whole universe started to suffocate, because he was so much dovetailed with Lord Vishnu. Now that doesn't mean that the soul within Dhruva Maharaj's body had become that like that. It just means that his body got the spiritual energy of Vishnu, and when he desired to do something, then Krishna is in everyone's heart, and he fulfills the desire according to what we deserve. That if we have a body that's capable of doing something, we desire to do something, then Krishna will fulfill it. But he's the one who's doing it all through his material energy. Krishna senses our desire just like one can smell the flavor of a flower by being near it. And he, according to our desire, which may be manifested in many different ways, for instance, there's thinking, there's feeling, and there is willing. Thinking means that the desire simply passes through our mind and we entertain it a little bit. And feeling means that it develops to the point that we actually feel about it, that we actually have some emotional attachment to it, which is deeper. It's not simply a superficial, but it develops to the point of feeling. And then willing means that we become so focused on it that we actually want to fulfill that desire by having our senses carry out that desire. So then Krishna orders the material nature according to what we deserve to arrange to fulfill that desire. Just like now, we may desire to float around in the room. Everyone here probably would like to flap their hands a little bit and be able to just float around the room. We could try it. I don't think anyone here will be very successful. You could take a course in one institution for $5,000-$10,000, and you can sit there and you can hop. You can like get a few inches off the ground if it's worth the $10,000. So right now we don't have the adhikari. We don't have the dessert to actually do anything. We can flap our hands up and down. But if we really want to fly, and we focus all our attention on flying, then of course modern society, they've developed airplanes because of their great intensity to fly without acquiring the qualification personally to fly. So Krishna has given them the intelligence how to develop airplanes in imitation of birds. And those who really want to fly without the inconvenience of having to take an airplane and all the problems that have come along with it, the exhaust, having to get the oil, the danger of flying, then they can become a bird in their next lifetime. Krishna will fulfill that desire. If that's what we develop, the desire to become like a bird, and we qualify ourselves to become a bird, then Krishna will give us the body of a bird. And therefore, we won't have to worry about having to get an airplane to fly. Save so much money on airplane tickets. You don't have to wait. There are no searches for the birds when they fly from one country to the next. There's no terrorist birds as far as I know. It's quite peaceful going from one place to the next. And of course, you may have a few enemies, predator birds, and they may attack you. So if you're not, weren't very pious in your last lifetime, and you became a bird, your life as a bird may be very short. In any case, in terms of flying, every bird has an advantage. But the aim of life is not to become a bird. I think all of us will agree with that. Nor is the aim of life to come back to Los Angeles in our next lifetime and work hard in order to get the basic necessities of life. But nor is the aim of life to get a body by which we're imagining, because it's all an imagination. It's all a virtual reality. It has nothing to do with our real selves. We simply remain an observer desiring to utilize our mystic powers, desiring to fly in the sky like a bird, or desire to work hard to maintain our family in this earth planet. All we can do is look out as the observer, in this virtual reality, and become caught up in dovetailing our desires to fulfill desires. As Krishna says, Nadate kasritit papam, na papam sukritim vibhum, agyanena aritam gyanam, tena muyanti jantava. Nor is the Supreme Lord assume anyone's sinful or pious activities. The embodied beings, however, are bewildered by the ignorance which covers their real knowledge. In other words, Prabhupada writes in the purport there, that desire is a subtle form of conditioning for the soul. So along with the body that we got comes a whole set of desires. And they seem perfectly normal. They fit perfectly with this body. Because in our last lifetime we developed certain desires, and on the basis of those desires we were given a body, and they fit very nicely. So we can't conceive there can be anything wrong with my desires, or anything wrong with my body. Everything seems to fit like hand into glove. The only problem is that we're not the body. That we're completely different from the body. And although somehow or another we're appreciating our present material existence and completely caught up in it, where we become a fan, a rooter, as they say, or a worshiper of our present existence, and we're in love with it, we're completely focused on it, we're in samadhi. 24 hours a day meditating on our material existence, but the only problem is, the only thing we'll get out of it is another material existence. Maybe by higher association, we can get a better material existence. We can go to the demigod planets. We can be born in Siddhaloka, but it's not so easy. It is not simply by taking a snapshot of a resonant Vidyaloka and then offering an RT once a day that we become qualified to go to Vidyaloka, Vidyadhara Loka, or go to Siddhaloka. One has to come to that level of goodness. One actually has to become purified of other desires, because you mix them all together, little desire for sense gratification, little desire for speculation, a little desire to watch our favorite football team, whatever else, and you mix that in with a little worship of the Siddhaloka planet, residence there, you don't wind up in Siddhaloka. You wind up in some other place. One has to purely come to the platform of the residence of Siddhaloka. And even amongst the residents of Siddhaloka, undoubtedly there are different gradations of perfection. Someone may have all mystic power there, but someone has better all mystic power than the other. No one ever comes out on top. Even Lord Brahma, he has four heads, but he's not even on top, because as he found out, that there are other Brahmas who have 10 million heads. And he's like, he felt himself to be just like a mosquito in the midst of the Brahmas who had 10 million heads. So, although everyone is trying hard to be, imagine themselves to be supreme, and someone may go through the austerity and perform the proper activities by which relatively they get a body which the illusion is more conducive to thinking oneself to be the supreme, but ultimately no one ever winds up really the supreme. All we can do is get a nice ride for a while in this particular playground, this joy ride that we have, and then get kicked out after some time into another machine and imagine ourselves to be the driver, but we're only the passenger observing and experiencing the results of how we're dovetailing our desires. Therefore, the whole aim of life is to hear about Krishna, that we should dovetail our desires with him, with his, and in whatever body we have, just like there was a little squirrel, and he was trying to help Lord Ramachandra take the little rocks, whatever little pebbles he could, and throw them into the ocean. And although Hanuman was throwing big boulders into the ocean, and it appeared that the squirrel was getting in the way of Hanuman, but Lord Ramachandra, when Hanuman chastised the squirrel for getting in the way, Lord Ramachandra chastised him, that this squirrel is doing as much service for me as you are, that I don't need you to throw the boulders. I'm simply giving you the opportunity to throw something into the water, and the squirrel is also, I'm giving him an opportunity according to his capacity. But both of yours, according to your devotional attitude, both your service is exactly the same. Therefore, whatever virtual reality we're riding around in right now, if we somehow or another want to do something to please Krishna, that's the perfection of our existence. Simply the desire to please Krishna. And the desire manifests itself in practical activities. It is not simply we're claiming I'm desiring to please Krishna and I do whatever I want with this body. No, our strong desire will be manifested by dhrita vrata, intense desire, or following the regular principles and performing the 9 processes of devotional service as consistently, as enthusiastically as possible. That manifests the fact that we're strongly attached to trying to please Krishna. And that is the perfection. That waste passes becoming Brahma, becoming Indra, or any other position in the material world. Everyone can achieve that perfection in this life by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, because everyone, wherever we are, in any circumstance, we can chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We can chant this mantra in any circumstance and be engaged in Krishna's service. But of course, if in the back of our mind we want Krishna to give us something, or in the back of our mind we're not really very convinced that there is a Krishna, or if we're chanting to Krishna but we don't really know how to chant and what mood to chant, then we won't get the full benefit of it. Then instead, we'll simply be elevated into a higher position in this material world, which is not bad. But unfortunately, even if we go to Siddhaloka and stay there for 20,000 years, or 50,000 years, or 100,000 years, and then we come back to this planet, and there's no more Sankirtan movement going on. Even we come back as a devotee, but all the devotees will be hiding in caves because the people will be looking to eat them. So it will be not very pleasant. You know, some of the katha will be about how Bhakta so-and-so was eaten yesterday. He went for a japa walk and the only thing left was his bones and his bead bag. They ate his beads. So it may not be so auspicious to desire anything other than Krishna's service. So Of course, that takes practice, but we have to practice that because our minds are more or less crazy. And we can find out how crazy our minds are just by chanting japa. Because generally the last thing the mind wants to think about is Krishna, his name, his form, his quality, his pastimes. And the first thing we want to do is go with the flow. Wherever the mind's going, we go with it because it's path of least resistance. Unfortunately, if we go with the flow of the mind, we'll wind up back in the material world again. Therefore, one has to make an effort, and it's by that effort that Krishna sees that we're sincere and then gives us the intelligence by which we can chant better, by which he sees our sincerity and reveals himself, purifies us, so that we can think of him spontaneously, with less and less trying to focus the mind upon chanting clearly, chanting to Krishna, not getting distracted by the thoughts that are arising within our mind, and then trying to chant as enthusiastically and lovingly as possible, so that the name, form, quality, and pastimes of Krishna, his associates, they all spontaneously appear within our remembrance. Then one is absorbed completely in Krishna consciousness, dovetailing his desires 100% in spreading the Sankirtan movement. Then one has actually liberated soul and will not have to take another material body, nor will one be disturbed over the material circumstances, because one will see oneself as an instrument for Krishna. And not only an instrument for Krishna, but one will be intimately in contact with Krishna 24 hours a day, so that Krishna, as a good friend, will constantly enliven the devotee so one can perform a service with the maximum enthusiasm, maximum consciousness, that one will feel as if Krishna is sitting right next to one, guiding one. Just like Krishna was in the chariot of Arjuna, telling Arjuna to do so many things, and therefore Arjuna was in fact infallible. Not only Krishna will be within our chariot, but the whole disciple succession will be there with us also to guide us in whatever we're doing, and therefore we'll always feel confident and we'll know exactly what to do to please not only the previous acharyas, but Krishna also. There'll be no more anxiety. And if one is not dovetailing oneself in the service of Krishna, all there can be is anxiety. Simply trying to being battered by the mode of goodness one moment, to the mode of passion, to the mode of ignorance, and not knowing which material desire will appear next or where it's going to lead us. Maybe it'll lead us to Siddhaloka or Apsaraloka, wherever but without going to Krishna Loka, our life will not be satisfying or will be perfect. So I'll stop there. Any questions? Yes, Prem Sankirtan.
Guru Maharaj, Prabhupada Maharaj, thank you very much for a nice class. You said we have to have proper qualification, adhikari, to receive Krishna's mercy, then he can fulfill our desire, basically spiritual desire. But it is explained in Nectar Devotion that Krishna is not obliged, even in that situation, to fulfill your desire. Is it only reason that he wants to make you more than you have more desire to attain him, or maybe some other reason why he didn't fulfill your desire, even if you have adhikar, proper qualification to receive mercy?
Really? What is your qualification to receive mercy?
For example, you have to...
Your good looks or your wealth? Or your good intelligence?
To be Vaishnava, basically you have to have some brahminical qualification. If you don't have, you cannot be Vaishnava devotee.
Vaishnava devotee. So to be
I mean, you have to follow four equality principle at least nicely. So
what's
if
that?
You don't follow, how you can get mercy?
Yeah, so we can try and follow, but that's all by the mercy of our spiritual master and Krishna that we're even following. One time, Prabhupada was asked, how do we have our... Oh, can we demand to see Krishna? And Prabhupada more or less wrote back, how can we demand to see Krishna? That if I examine my qualifications to see Krishna, I'll find out I have no qualifications. All I have is disqualifications. But my spiritual master, he's dragging me back to Krishna. So to think, why isn't Krishna revealing himself? I'm so qualified. May not be the correct perspective on things. On the other hand, we can desire, and then we rely upon Krishna to fulfill that desire. And if he doesn't fulfill that desire, then we take it as Krishna's mercy also. That Krishna knows better what's good for us than we know. Not that Krishna made some mistake or he's asleep at the wheel and he doesn't really know what's going on. He doesn't even know how great I am. There's something wrong with him. But anyhow, I tolerate these things because, you know, everyone makes mistakes, even Krishna. It may not be the proper perspective on things. Therefore, we should understand not only for ourselves, but everyone is praying to Krishna. Every living entity, every species of life is in a constant prayer to Krishna because Krishna is in the heart of every living entity and he understands the prayer of the living entity in the body of, a bird. Simply the soul wants to fly. In the body of a chipmunk, it wants an acorn. So the desires are more limited. In the body of a human being, then they may want other things. They may want a nice house, a nice family. But Krishna is sensing the desires, and for everyone, whether we're conscious or unconscious, he's making all the arrangements by which one's desires are fulfilled. But when one becomes a devotee, one realizes, or tries to become a devotee, one realizes that our desires are not, what happens is not independent of Krishna. We're completely dependent on Krishna. And Krishna is not ultimately obliged to anyone. As the super soul, of course, he naturally fulfills people's desires according to what they deserve. But in terms of devotion, as he told the gopis when he left them, sometimes he disappears for some time to increase their desire to see him. Because if Krishna came every time we said, hey Krishna, come over here, then we'd develop a familiarity breeds contempt. And instead of having the proper attitude towards Krishna, we might become contemptuous. So sometimes Krishna, in order to strengthen our desire and to make sure that we understand he's not so cheap, then he doesn't reveal himself so easily. He tries to encourage us to increase our desire. Just like on book distribution, sometimes we become very enlivened, enlightened, everyone starts taking a book, and we start imagining how powerful I am. And then suddenly the whole situation changes, and everyone says, hey kid, why don't you get a job? You know, shave your head, or get a haircut, or something. Suddenly the whole scene changes, and we think, how is it possible? I had my ark, I had my bow, I had my Gandiva bow, I had my chariot, I had all these things, and now they're useless. What happened? Why did Krishna withdraw them? Well, we can bet that Krishna had a good reason. Because he's not only there to... We're there primarily to get the opportunity to get trained up so we can become a pure devotee of Krishna. And Krishna will do what's necessary to help us. Sometimes by empowering us, and sometimes by taking all the power away. Savastra.
Well, you know, we hear and we read and we that Prabhupada's always saying that Krishna is very impartial. In other words, he, you know, if you're a demon, you're a demon, or if you're a devotee, you're a devotee. Krishna treats everyone equally. But how do we understand, like, let's say, for instance, in the pastime of Agasura, where, you know, he was a demon, he wanted to kill Krishna. And the cowherd boys. In fact, he did kill them. Krishna had to bring him back to life again. But all that Krishna did was just expand himself, choke the demon to death, and he was able to acquire Sarupya, Mukti. And so here you are as a devotee. I mean, all he did, and Prabhupada describes that the reason that is that for a moment, for one moment, he thought favorably of Krishna. Just that's all Agasura did. For one moment, he thought a little bit favorably towards Krishna because he thought he was like pretty far up person, an extraordinary individual. And because of that alone.
He tasted good also.
Huh?
He tasted good.
Yeah, okay. But Prabhupada said in purport that, you know, he just thought of Krishna favorably for a moment. And because he thought of him favorably for one moment, he was liberated and he got the form of Vishnu. Or Vishnu-like, let's say.
I think you got Saruja.
Yeah, Saruja, that's right.
Saruja.
So anyway, my question is, how does the devotee understand that that a person like that was able to acquire that? But here you are as a devotee, and you're chanting Hare Krishna, and you're doing a lot of service, you're performing the austerities, and you're doing so many things, but you're basically suffering to some degree. You're stressed out and in anxiety, and we find that devotees even leave Krishna consciousness. So how is it that that happens in that particular realm, whereas a demon like Agasura is liberated?
You mean, why shouldn't we be envious of Agasura and start
praying
for the time when we can eat
Krishna? Or maybe you can enlighten us, how is it that a devotee goes through all this endeavor, and then eventually they just, like, let's say, bloop or lose their desire to serve?
I guess we have to understand that the desire of Agasura to eat Krishna was quite intense. And he must have developed it over many lifetimes. Indeed, in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find out that all these demons were not ordinary personalities. They were actually great mystics in their previous lifetime.
But they were friends of Kamsa. That's their association.
Yeah, but they were great mystics also. They had developed these powers. And some, just like, for instance, we'll give an example of Putana. She's a good example. Putana, in her previous lifetime, according to our acharyas, was either the sister of Bali Maharaj or his daughter. But somehow or another, when Vamanadeva walked into the arena of sacrifice that Bali Maharaj was performing, as soon as his daughter or his sister saw Vamanadeva, she fell in love with him and wanted to become his mother. But when Vamanadeva took everything away from Bali Maharaj, she became very disturbed and wanted to kill him. So with these two intense desires, she came back as Putana. She got the opportunity to act as Krishna's mother, and the opportunity to try and kill him. Luckily, by trying to kill Krishna, she became purified, and therefore she attained, because the original desire was to become his mother, she got the opportunity to become his mother. So it wasn't just by some accident. She happened to be some demon walking the street, walked into the house and killed Krishna, tried to kill Krishna, and became a mother. No, it was by qualification too. But we don't know all the past lives. If you really want to know, you should try and find Agasura and have him go through past life regression. And then everything will be revealed to you.
Well, my point is, still regardless of that, in order to come to Krishna consciousness, you're not an ordinary soul. Because we know there's millions and billions of living entities on this planet.
Oh.
And so if you come to Krishna consciousness, so yes, I do realize that it's by the mercy of the Guru and Krishna within the heart. But still, that individual is not an ordinary soul.
Yes.
Who actually wants to come and serve Krishna and give their life to Krishna. So,
We have a much better chance than Agasura. Agasura just became got Sayuja. Yeah. That's not a big accomplishment. He may have fallen down by now out of boredom, being merged in Brahman. We get an opportunity, even we don't go back to Godhead, we get an opportunity to take prasadam and chant Hare Krishna and hear about Krishna, which is the same activities that the residents of the spiritual world do. Now, someone may not have a very strong desire, and they may leave, but then they get a chance the next lifetime to take up where they left off. Because we don't come, most of it's Kali Yuga. It's not like in our last lifetime we were purely fixed on Krishna consciousness. pure devotees, and somehow or another we fell into this material body that we have with these material desires. Oh, it's what we've cultivated in the past. And therefore, a little attraction for Krishna has permanent value, but still we sometimes get carried away by our previous bad habits for some time. And then after getting burned by them, then we come back to Krishna again. Till eventually we learn and we remain fixed in Krishna consciousness. Thank you very much. Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.